is episode 150 of We Talk Comics, season 2 is the show title. And I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo. I have with me the Chief Defender of the Faith, Brett.
Hello.
The Cup Reporter, K, or the K in our Cup Reporter, Keith.
Yo, yo.
And nicknameless Chris.
I want a Defender of the Faith, man.
Nope, my business card already has that on it. You lose.
Is We Talk podcast business card literally have that written on there? Like, you'll have to wait till he gives out all 1,000 of those 37 years before you can take that over. So good luck. So welcome back to We Talk Comics. This is our new weekly format that we're going with. We'll see how well it works out and whether or not you guys enjoy it. But we're going to kick it off with what we'll be doing from now on. We're not reviewing comics, but we are going to discuss some comics that we read as a group. Brett, you picked the comics. What are the comics you picked, and why are these the ones you picked?
All right. Well, one of the reasons, because we get a lot of comic previews, so I went through those folders, and I mean, obviously, I tried to take something from one of each of the folders to a certain degree, but the first one that I chose was the Lumberjanes Gotham Academy. Now, for me, I thought it's a number one, so it's a good start, but you hear a lot about Lumberjanes, you hear a lot about Gotham Academy, so you know, why not? It's a good book for us to start with. In Dynamite, I chose the Gold Key Alliance number 3. It had a Magnus Robot Fighter cover, so that kind of sold me on that. Let's see now. From IDW, I figured I'd go with something that was pretty deep into the run, so I took Star Trek number 58, and that was the end of a Spock storyline, so I thought that would be interesting. And also, you know, because one of the keys for the Star Trek and also the Gold Key was how much we would be able to confidently read the book and at the end feel like we got something out of it because we've not read, you know, the storylines leading up to that point. And then finally, at Valiant, I picked 4001 AD Bloodshot number 1.
All right, and now let's move on to Lumberjacks, Little Gotham, Gotham Academy, Lumberjanes. What'd I say?
Lumberjacks.
I know what I said, but you're supposed to say I said Lumberjanes, by the way. But I don't think
you want to get that one wrong.
150 episodes, and we just figured out we're just supposed to agree with Mao.
That's what this podcast is. I've known
it
that.
It doesn't
since
matter if he
one.
Calls it blood shit.
No,
that's the way we just go.
We're getting there.
Way to ruin it, Chris. Way to ruin the future jokes. Spoiler alert, Brett has something to say later.
Thanks, Chris. Way to drop it. Dropping the ball. All right.
Anyways, Gotham Academy, Lumberjanes. Okay, number one. What I want to know before we talk about the book is how familiar were you guys going into this book with the characters?
Zero.
I have read no Lumberjanes, and I have read one Gotham Academy.
I have read two story arcs of Gotham Academy and one of Lumberjanes and thoroughly enjoyed them both. So for me, this was, is this chocolate and peanut butter, or is this, as Keith would say, chocolate and, or peanut butter and sushi?
Ooh. All right. Well, there's an image I'm not going to. All right. Well, thank you.
I paint a word picture.
Yeah, let me tell you, if we ever do a weird food in the patio again, we ain't doing that.
I could never do a weird food on the patio again.
Yeah, I know.
No. We won't be doing weird food on the patio. We will be doing weird food under the gazebo.
Oh, no.
I've been doing little weekly podcasts all by myself and not recording them. So I missed that episode, man. Do that every week. Forget about the comic thing.
Weird Food was a lot of fun, and we're never doing it again.
I would say maybe Weird Drinks is fine.
Weird Drinks might be a little easier.
Weird Food.
I don't know, that teriyaki flavored cola or whatever it was, teriyaki flavored, that was no screaming shits, let me tell you. Actually, it was exactly that. Later. Let me tell you. Maybe it was everything else we ate. Anyways, let's move back into Gotham Academy. So, does anybody know the people who made this? Chris, you're probably the best person then, because you're the most familiar with both characters. Who are the creators on this book, and are they for the people who generally typically work on which series?
You know what? I do not know. I believe it's the Lumberjanes team, but I will have to look that up.
It's on the Boombox Boom Studio. So and they actually reference Becky Cloonan and Brendan Fletcher, Carl Kerschel and Mark Doyle. So and I know that they are the DC team. So in this case, I'm pretty damn sure that China Clugston Flores and Rosemary Valero O'Connell, those are some names, are the Lumberjanes team.
Did you feel then, Chris, though, did you feel like when you're reading it, like it's more familiar to the Lumberjanes book you read, or more a mix?
Definitely. Definitely. If I could get a handle on anybody in this, because there are so many characters in every freaking panel. this is one where I had to squint to actually figure out where the word balloon was pointing, and then search my memory on who that character is and where they're from.
Yeah, I think that's probably the greatest difficulty I had with the book too. I mean, there's a lot of good to say about this book, but that's probably the greatest difficulty too. Is like, I don't know these characters, and at no point in time was anything done to highlight each specific character's little character nuance. I know I'm not going to get a lot of character development in a book like this, but just a little bit to give me some sense of who they are in the team and what their purpose or role is on both sides. I don't know that I got that for all the characters. And that if I had my biggest difficulty with the book, that was probably it for me.
And changing the aesthetic of the Gotham Academy characters did not help the situation at all. Because all these characters look a little bit different. In the book I'm most familiar with.
I think that's one of the weird things about this book is you kind of expect that anyone picking up this book is going to be a fan of Lumberjanes or a fan of Gotham Academy. I think this book actually assumes you are a fan of both, because it's not like it introduces you to any if you're coming from one side or the other.
No, as a jump on point, this is no good, just because I had the small amount that I knew the Gotham Academy characters did not help me at all. And, you know, the Lumberjanes, it was just like hopping right into the middle of their respective universes and like, okay, run.
It's kind of one of the storytelling techniques that as much as it creates extra dialogue that's unrealistic, it's kind of one of those storytelling techniques that's gone by the wayside you could see the usefulness of it in a situation like this, of the way the characters are introduced into books used to be a little easier to follow as a general rule, I find.
I think an old style Marvel faces and balloons first page would help with their little name underneath and like that, a quick reference guide so you could flip back to remember who this person is.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised they didn't.
Could have done something kind of retro there. Yeah, like, I mean, just have some fun with it. You know, a Legion of Superheroes roll call kind of beginning or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of jumps you in. Like, I hope you're an audience. I hope you're a reader of both of these, because we're not giving you a jack if you're coming from one. There really doesn't seem to be intention of to turn Lumberjanes fans into Gotham Academy fans or vice versa.
I wouldn't be surprised, to be frank, if the fans are already quite you know, like fans of both.
I'm certain a percentage is, but it's just kind of one of those storytelling techniques. I don't even think it's lazy as so much as it's just something that is no longer part of how comics are done now as a general rule. And you know, I mean, sometimes maybe it's something that can be brought back in certain situations. Maybe more forethought can be put into this type of thing. You know, and I'll put that as the constructive criticism. And I know, it was very talky at the beginning, this book, extremely talky.
Actually, I found it more talky in the middle, not at the beginning.
I found it talky for the first two thirds, to be honest. So, but you know, I mean, it certainly has and I'm not familiar, like I say, with either character, either book. It has a Scooby-Doo feel to it, which, you know, is always fun. And by the time it kind of got into some of the more action stuff going, I found myself enjoying it quite a bit. Despite I didn't know the characters, but even though I don't know the characters, the situation's pretty obvious, and there's a mystery there that I find kind of intriguing. And the character designs I really enjoyed and things like that. So it's like there's a certain charm to the book. You know, there's some things that could have been done better, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, that mystery was a real hook for me, actually. I got into it, and it was like, man, I should go back and read those Gotham Academies, and Lumberjanes, for that matter, actually. Although I didn't love this book, I am kind of thinking that I should go back. So, in that regard, Boom, it will probably make a profit on people actually... Gotham Academy fans actually checking out Lumberjanes and vice versa.
Boombox.
Yeah, it's funny because to me, it's like Gotham Academy is Harry Potter, and the Lumberjanes seems to me to be very Gravity Falls. So it was like you're mashing those together, and it's not that I had a real problem with it, but I would, from my perspective, I would be more likely to go back and read Lumberjanes than I would Gotham Academy.
Now, I believe Lumberjanes is now on the new Comicology Unlimited. So,
it's previously been on Scribe, so I imagine it is.
Well, I have a bunch from buying one of those Humble Bundles, so it's just a matter of going in and digging them out.
So maybe this is a success from the publisher's point of view. I don't know if I continue with number two.
I don't think I'd read the...
Of this particular series, though.
Yeah. I don't think I would continue reading this, but it would make me interested enough in Lumberjanes.
I'm interested in it when it's collected, definitely. Because I like the mystery. How about you, Keith?
It didn't really draw me in enough to either one. Coming in pretty well completely cold. But I'm also... not even remotely close to the target audience for these books. So, I'm not too broken up by,
yeah.
a nice dictionary definition of not for me.
All right. Why don't we move on to the Gold Key Alliance number three then. By Phil Hester and Brent Peoples. So it's obvious that this is a crossover between a lot of the original Gold Key characters.
I'd say if you read the first half, it wasn't obvious at all.
No. It's obvious from reading the wrap up page from like what has gone before. That part is obvious.
See, it's funny. This one actually does begin with a one sentence about the four key characters you're supposed to know.
Yes.
Like on your credits page. It doesn't give you a huge amount. I mean, it's basically five sentences, one on each of the lead characters, and then they're all drawn together by a force that threatens to tear not only our world apart, but every possible world in the multiverse. So, I mean, even that amount gives you a little bit to go on.
It does until panel one.
And then it's a Magnus Robot Fighter book.
But you know, that's the funny thing. It's it's a Magnus Robot Fighter book, which I quite enjoyed. I found myself getting into it. I didn't need to really know what had come before. I got enough. And then it hopped into, which part did it hop into next? The
Solar, I think.
Solar, yeah. And then into the Turok and then the Samson. And like, when it started hopping around, I immediately was thrown off. Like, I don't know what's going on anymore.
It does it in a weird way. It's like, it's a huge chunk of Magnus. And yes. Then it kind of, and then it moves into, you know, the smaller chunks of the other characters. And so, but it's not like they're not interacting in any way, and there's difficult to even see what the connection is of their storylines together that ties them together
until like the very last page
can
start to see where that storyline, like, I don't know how long this Alliance book is. I don't know if it's a miniseries. I don't know if it's a regular series. And you know, the thing was, I did enjoy the Magnus part, but it was almost like every one of them was written by somebody else, because the story, like the way the stories were put together, were just so different in each case.
I mean, I enjoyed the Magnus to a degree as well, Brett. Like you, I think you and I have an advantage in that we've read so much Magnus.
Yes.
So, I mean, they're bringing back characters and showing characters and situations that are calling to previous versions of Magnus that have been published over the last 30 years. And those are recognizable to you and me. It'd be less so, I think, to Keith and Chris, and even less so to a completely cold reader. So, I mean, for us to say we enjoyed it, we come in with the advantage of being very familiar with the universe. Meanwhile, I don't know Samson at all, but to tell you the truth, that's kind of the one I found the easiest to digest, even more so than the Magnus, because the reason I felt I understood Magnus is because I understand Magnus, mm-hmm. not because it was presented in a way that is easy to understand.
No, I don't think much of it was easy to understand. But
I really enjoyed both pages of Solar. Solar was the only Gold Key book that I read more than the first issue. I read like the first arc. It didn't hold my interest for very long, but you know, I was a fan of Solar in the Valiant days. I looked it up. It's a 5-issue miniseries, so this seems late to not have anyone interacting.
Yeah, it really does.
I mean, I would assume that if you look at numbers 1 and 2, it would look a lot like this. Maybe like, you know, maybe number 1 is a lot of Solar and less of the others, and then you know, maybe it's cycling. I don't know.
Yeah, I would get that.
Yeah, unfortunately for this one, the art sort of put me off the book entirely. It's that type of art that I really don't respond to, where there's a lot of face detail, but a lot of other stuff is left to your imagination. And I mean, it's a stylistic choice, but I just couldn't get into it. And jumping in mid storyline like this, I unfortunately, other than I can say it's not for me. I'm pretty sure it's not for me. As to the quality, I really can't say.
You know, one of the things that I wonder about, because we mentioned that there's each character got a little write-up, and that helped, because they're slightly different versions than you might be familiar with, even if you know them. But one of the things is there's a lot of other characters in the book and that aren't those guys who don't get any write-up. And again, I recognize some of them because I'm pretty familiar with the Gold Key, and I'm sure Brett too. But for you guys, was it like, okay, who's the robot with the head, and who's the woman they're talking about? And you know, and were you guys like, did that bother you, or is that kind of something that they could work on, or is that, do you think kind of, you know, is that not an issue? Did you absorb that pretty quickly? How did that work?
I have no idea who the robot with the head is. But in the issue 3, is that really a concern?
In this case, I
am fully. I'm sure if I went back to issue 1, I'd figure it out rather quickly.
You know what really threw me off is in the Turok storyline, where they flashed back to the past once, and I wound up rereading the few panels like 4 times in a row, because I was just trying desperately to figure out what was going on, because it wasn't like that had happened anywhere else. So
there was kind of a, not a flashback, but a weird sequence in the middle of the Magnus. That was the one. That was the one that I was going, what the hell is this? Like, what?
Yeah.
Is this? Like, I couldn't. Like, it's presented as basically. I mean, I don't think there's a spoiler alert. Magnus gets into a fight with a robot, and it's shown that he's like a robot himself, basically being controlled and fighting this other robot. And he's like a Rock'em Sock'em robots type battle deal thing, and then it's like, oh, it turns out that he was just imagining it. But like, because of how it's presented, I'm watching it going, is this how he gets into his fights? And not until afterwards that I realized, oh, he didn't know he was doing it. It was like, you know?
I think it was a flashback, but I'm intrigued by, like, I'll mention this about Magnus and then I'll finish my thought about the Turok, was that, you know, I'm intrigued by the concept because we've always looked at it as Magnus, robot fighter. But now it almost looks like they're trying to make this Magnus robot fighter.
Yeah, that's part of the thing that I think is a little confusing.
It is definitely confusing. And then the Turok thing, like, I think if the Magnus had gone into the flashback in a similar way as the Turok, it would have helped. But the fact that they went in two very different ways, that really drew me out and just kind of threw me off. I like the Gold Key characters overall, but I just, you know, this book was kind of messy.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where, again, I know it's a better experience collected, but I don't know if this will be, for me, collected would be enough. I'd rather just read Samson by himself. Actually, that's the character I enjoyed the most.
All right, anybody with anything else to say, or shall we move on?
Other than the fact that I just thought this book was a little odd, that Dynamite hasn't published any of these characters for 2 years. This series might just be a placeholder to keep the rights or whatever. And I think it shows the quality, maybe, that this is just something they did for legal reasons rather than any creative drive.
Possible. I do know when I saw Phil Hester was the person, I thought he seemed like an odd choice to me for.
Well,
for
he
this.
Was involved with the original line with, I thought maybe if, you know, somebody new was behind it, there'd be more of a push to actually do it. I don't know. But, yeah, that's my take anyway.
All right. Star Trek number 58, the part 4 of 4 of Legacy of Spock by Mike Johnson, art by Tony Chastain. And it has a paragraph on previously in Star Trek, so that definitely made a difference. What did you think, Mo?
This was the book I enjoyed the most, easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and again, we talk about familiarity with characters. I'm familiar with Magnus, but I mean, hey, I think just about everybody's familiar with Spock and Star Trek. You know, and this is like the original series and the movies, you know, kind of mixed together. It was based on the new films. I think they do a really good job of nailing the characters from the films perfectly. I think that I've read some of the comic book versions of this movie universe before, and I'm very impressed by them. I think it's Dave Johnson that was the writer of this.
Mike Johnson. Johnson.
Thank you, Mike Johnson. Johnson. Yeah, he. I think he's done pretty much all of them.
I think you're right on that, yeah.
Yeah, and I know I've enjoyed pretty much all of them that I've read. I just think this is, again, I'm familiar with it, but I come into issue 4 of a 4-issue storyline and don't feel at all confused. I feel I understand what's going on. I understand the characters. It's part of it is familiarity and part of it is storytelling. I think as far as the storytelling, this is, and in many ways, it's probably the most old school style of storytelling, and yet that there was a certain advantage to it. So yeah, and there's no question, like, even though I didn't read the first ones, I still got the emotional connection I needed from it, and I really liked this one was pretty obvious that this is very much a tribute to both the Spock character and to Leonard Nimoy, and I think they did a really nice job.
My biggest question would actually be, if you read 1, 2, and 3, like number four is so good, like how much more do they add to it? It would be really interesting to kind of go back and see that.
I don't know. I don't know that issue four would be a lot better. I just think it would be a really good storyline regardless.
Oh, absolutely. And I've enjoyed a lot of the ones, especially the storylines that tie into the movies. Like I read the origin of Khan, which I thought was really good. And like the
yeah, it was like a prelude. Yeah, prelude.
And
yeah,
the prequel to the new first one, the new first Star Trek, and that kind of thing. And I enjoyed all of them. So
yeah, the only time I read Star Trek is when you guys challenge me to, because I don't you usually jump on the property books. But I have to say, I don't think I've ever not really enjoyed one of them. I mean, I sort of fell in love with the Romulans in this, which is saying something, because I hate those funky-headed aliens that they introduced, funky-headed Romulans they introduced in, like, what was it, Star Trek 6 or 7, or Next Generation 6, or...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And you know what? That's true, though. I mean, I talk about familiarity. There's the two Star Trek, the two Romulan lead characters who are the you know, I guess, what? Villains? Villains doesn't seem like the right word. What's the right word? Antagonists?
Antagonists, yeah.
Is probably a better word. There's these two characters. We're not familiar with them at all. And yet, I definitely got their emotional story arc. Like, I got that. And that, I mean, again, I think that's a hit.
I think Johnson's really good. Like, I've read a few of the Star Treks as well. I don't read more. I think maybe just because I like Chris, I'm not big into the licensed properties.
It's off our radar.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I think Johnson's really good though at using the shorthand of everyone coming into this book knows Star Trek to the level that, you know, I didn't even watch all the TV shows, but I've seen most of the movies. Like, he plays on certain things because something else has done the heavy lifting of making these things emotionally and hit you. Like the second line of the book, war in orbit over SETI Alpha 5. You know, anyone that's seen Wrath of Khan, that name's going to twig for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, you know, he doesn't have to do. He can focus on other things because the emotional stuff and, you know, some of these other connections have already been done for him. And he's good at not duplicating that stuff.
It's like a callback to that stuff. Really, yeah. Well done.
I really like the art in this book, actually, like particularly the space battles. Like they look cluttered, but everything's thought through, and it kind of adds to the chaos of like a full on. Almost like a ground war in space. Like it's hundreds of ships going up against each other. I thought the artist did a really good job on this issue.
All in all, I think that what this felt like is like a quality book, well produced. It feels classy, you know, partially because of the tribute to Nimoy that it obviously is, and partially just I think in the care they obviously take care. Of the care they take for the property, respect for the property.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely the best book we read this week.
All right,
let's go to not the best book we read this week.
That's right. 4001 AD.
I really wanted to like
Bloodshot. Writer Jeff Lemire, artist Doug Braithwaite. You know, like it's got the talent attached to it. Okay. So do you want me to tell my story then right now, Mo?
Tell it now.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Chris, you bastard.
So when I was deciding, I was typing it onto our WhatsApp, and when I originally typed it out, I typed it out as Bloodshit. And so then after I almost said that, I thought to myself, well, now if we were doing the old style Weeviews, then if I hated this book, then I could so easily call this book Bloodshit and it would just fit perfectly. As it stands, we're not doing the old style Weeviews, so I will just call what Bloodshot looks like in this book Bloodshit. Because that's actually what he kind of looks like.
This is one of the worst character designs I've ever seen.
Bar none.
I lived through, and we all lived through the 90s. Like, this is not, and he has pouches. Like, I mean, he has like an awful, awful character design, and he still has pouches. He looks like
Swarm. He looks
I was about to say, he looks like Swarm. Like, if anyone's familiar with the Marvel character, the Swarm, who's just made of bees, he's basically that with smooth edges because he's made of energy or something. I don't know. I kind of
sort of red like blood.
He's Swarm with computer coloring is what he is.
Yeah, like kind of paint by number.
Yeah.
They took the original Bloodshot character and in the V2 universe with that Mark Waid was the editor in chief of, when they brought him back, he was like the regular character, but like pumped up on, it's like if he took all the steroids that everybody else on the planet was planning to take, like he was, and he looked awful, and I'm trying to decide which looks worse, that or this. Like,
there's a panel on page 10 where he's just holding two guns and he's just standing there, and it's an upward shot of his crotch, basically. Oh, and
that's an awful, awful panel.
it's just really, really bad.
It took a second go because, I mean, and he was familiar with the Bloodshot, the design that's been used for quite a while. He's got the red dot on the center of his chest. In this, I actually didn't realize until I was looking through it a second time, it's not a dot at all. It's a hole directly through him for no particular reason.
Oh, I got that right away. I was like,
yeah. It's like there's a tunnel through the center of his chest.
But you want to know the worst part? Is that if you look really closely at the art, you would see that it's always just gray behind there. And if you look straight through and kind of figure out what would actually be there, it's not right. There should be like actual, you know, like the background elements don't work with just the fact that it's gray straight through his hole, which sounds really weird.
I wish there was something I could say about the book itself that was, you know, that would level out this ridiculously bad design, but I'm kind of stuck in the design so awful. I do have to say before we go on,
I'd like to know what it is that's going on in Brett's life that Bloodshot, which is an actual word, is less common on his show than the word bloodshed.
Yeah, it auto-corrected the bloodshed. Yeah.
There's his autofill going, sounds legit.
Bloodshed. He's like, have you had some sort of, you know, kidney stones or something like that we should know about, Brett? Like some sort of,
has your ass
been on fire?
I think
it was from the patio, the food on the patio.
Yeah. Still a year and a half. Yeah, it gave Keith celiac disease, and it gave Brett the blood shit.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yes.
I think a lot of times reviewers don't get some nudges because they do not talk about the lettering enough. The lettering on this is terrible. What actually bugged me is that it's 4001 AD, and the lettering choice that they made makes all of the numbers bleed. And at times I thought it was 9001.
Oh yes, you're absolutely right. It does. It totally
like,
does.
Some of the lettering choices for the computer text I found really weird. But yeah, like specifically the numbers. If you're going to use that many numbers in the text, I should know the difference between a 4001 and a 9001 AD. It was some bad choices made along the way there.
Well, it's a very like fancy stylized text for when Bloodshot is talking, and I just
Are
think
you
that
just calling him Bloodshot every time.
I mean, we got to put the warning on anyway. We might as well.
But yeah, like
there's two levels of warning.
it's almost like it's really bad computer font written by a person.
Yeah, it's just some odd choices, and I'm not a fan of lettering that calls it that reminds me of the mechanics that calls attention to itself, and it does that a lot with, you know, some of the choices of the bubbles with second overlaid bubbles for the word balloons.
But, you know, if they had taken the bubbles the way they are, like stylized bubble with the bubbles with the white drop shadow to or the white stroke, but if you had taken that and then made the text completely normal, I probably would have accepted it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had made the text stylized and then made the bubbles more normal, I probably would have been closer to accepting that. I think it's the combination of both that's just overkill in this case.
All right, enough about this. Chris,
what did you think about the story?
What did you think about the story, Chris?
Okay, this is where I'm going. First off, I have to say the design, favorite part. second favorite part, because the story and the writing is where, for me, this book fell hard and fell hard first. Because, I mean, I love Jeff Lemire. I have never read a Jeff Lemire comic I did not like until this particular one. And I figured out what he did. He watched the movie Soldier with Kirk Russell from the 90s and started transcribing. Just replace computer controlled by nanite and you got it. Really, for a four-issue limited series, I want more story even in issue one than this book has.
It's a, I read this.
He moves like 10 feet.
I literally read this in probably 2 minutes. Like, and it's amazing. Like, this book is, and I didn't realize it's a 4-issue miniseries. I
thought it was just a one shot.
I don't know when it's over.
That actually makes it even worse.
I think it's tying into their 4001 event or something.
I'm sure it is, but it's still other than introducing him in 4001,
nothing happens. I'm like, this book's over. I'm like, okay, so why did that need to happen? Like, why did this book have to happen? Like, okay, other than the fact that he's there and, like, I guess you've given him a fresh slate to start clean. But really, when a character shows up after 4,000 years, isn't that enough of a fresh slate? he needs to finish his mission? I'm like, really?
I'm not a Bloodshot fan. And
are you a Bloodshot fan? Is
my I am not Ray. I didn't know that Bloodshot's first name was Ray. That ties back. I actually thought they were referring to the other Valiant character that's the star of this 4001 crossover.
Chris, that's something that they did poorly then, because the whole point is that his memories were all given to him false. So he isn't Ray. He is Ray. He isn't Ray. He's somebody else. He's this other person. They reference it, but they never actually explain it to you in a way that you could, if you're not.
Oh, no. I thought they were trying to convince me he was Ray, like Rye, R-A-I, not R-A-Y.
The problem is, I can see how you would think that.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's
because the design was so different than the regular Bloodshot.
So what went wrong? I mean, here we talk about this book has a great pedigree. Jeff Lemire is one of the most respected writers in the industry. Doug Braithwaite is really, I mean, he's born to draw Bloodshot, you know, like he's drawing some brilliant stuff with him. What went wrong? How does this happen?
Crossoveritis? You know, we need a Bloodshot book to tie into this thing?
Yeah, it just seems like they thought that it seems like a great, you know, publisher came out there and said, we totally need to get this Bloodshot book out there. Let's redesign him for 4001. Let's do all this stuff. And they got together and as a group, they said, this is it. And you know, then we read it and
I think it's something that we, you know, identified when we talked about DCU and when we've talked about Marvel Now number ones. If you go into it with an approach of change for change's sake, you screw with everything, as opposed to you know, having a more thoughtful, here's the parts that work and here's the parts that don't. I mean, this really felt like, I don't know, changed literally everything in the book. Changed the way he looks, changed that there's a giant hole in his chest, changed the, you know, who he really was. Like, just change, make a list of everything about Bloodshot, change all of it. And it, with no real thoughtfulness to, you know, what you've got left if you've changed everything. And also just throw one out with the 4001 AD logo on it, because we'll be pushing that all summer.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame, because it doesn't make me want to check out anymore. No. 4001, which is exactly opposite.
It scares me, you know, because if the rest of them are even close to this, then, you know, ooh. I should have.
You're best color man in the business.
Yeah, I should have chosen. Yeah, I am so
jealous. No, I'm glad you chose this, because otherwise we wouldn't have got the Bloodshot moment.
And that's true.
That's way better. That moment on this podcast way more entertaining than the book that we read.
Next month, though, I'm choosing Ninjak for Chris.
Nice.
Oh, I don't think he has a book right now.
He totally does. Ninjak 16 came out the same time as Bloodshot. Bloodshot.
There must be. If there's a Ninjak 4001.
We
are definitely reviewing that bad boy.
Oh, yes, we are. I wonder if the ninja will be purple.
I'm just going to open the comic and see.
Just because I was so confused about this book, I did go back and read the free comic book day of 4001. And I have to say, it's much better. I would go as far to say I trust Valiant enough.
That's low-hanging
that
fruit, isn't
this
it?
Is...
That's kind of a head or gut kind of thing.
This is an abnormality. I really don't think Valiant pushes out books this bad very often.
Okay.
I think they just won the We Talk Comics lottery. On the book that we would hate so much.
Okay, so I opened up Ninjak 16. Now, I've gone to page 21, and so Ninjak now, he wears mostly black, but he wears a purple scarf around his nose, like a, you know, Western Bandit kind of thing. And...
Western Bandit.
Yeah. Okay, but the problem is, on page 21...
You mean like a ninja?
No, it's not like a ninja. This doesn't look like any kind of ninja I've ever seen before. But I've gone to page 21, and there's a character called Roku, and she has hair. And let me tell you, this is Image in the 90s right here, because her hair is all around the page. It looks like some sort of crazy Rob Liefeld thing going on right now. And it's kind of awesome and scary both at the same time. It's very Image 2000 art.
You're still reading this next week. I don't care.
Yeah, like honestly, I'm looking at these panels and I'm like, dude, did you just grab like an Image artist? Because... her hair is straight out of like Spider-Man Venom kind of thing.
Look it up. Look up there. All
right.
I love that we've just reviewing a book that none of us have looked at now.
Yeah.
Love it.
Wow. Okay, so it's Diego Bernard who's the penciler on this. Matt Kint is the writer. See, now there's another writer that I happen to really enjoy his work, but yeah. I'm not sure that that this doesn't look like a book that
not
I would
promising.
Enjoy, but
not promising. So we have to read it.
We kind of do. I, you know, we'll do a special for next week. That's funny,
folks. We like comics. We really do.
Well, yeah,
it's just
totally
a bad
do.
Week. We
apparently
put a
Star Trek comics is what we like, but.
Make sure to tell us how you're liking our return to our old format.
So is there anything else that, any news or any other things, anything you guys have watched or read or anything else on your mind? Anybody else have any? I know Brett had mentioned he wanted to talk a little bit about the Preacher TV show.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, well, I know Mo hasn't seen it, but Keith and Chris, I assume that you've both watched at least the first episode.
I have not.
Oh, you have not. All right.
I have. I have to say I loved it, actually.
All right.
And the changes they've made for the sake of television actually might make a more streamlined story. I'm excited about this, actually.
See, it's interesting because I sat down to watch it with my wife. And at the end of the 1.5 hours, I was... I was...
Your
wifey? No. Keith has a wifey. I don't have a... I have a wife, yes. Okay. But at the end of it, I was kind of left staring at the TV. And my wife was ready to, you know, throw me out of the house for forcing her to watch something so awful. She absolutely hated it. And she just could not, she did not understand a damn thing that was going on in that. And, you know, I'm like, oh, well, this was going on. She's like, how was I supposed to know that? I'm like, read the comics, I guess.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work.
That's a bad, bad sign, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very interested in what people are thinking about it who kind of aren't comic book readers. Like, personally, I'm willing to give it a few because it looks weird and it looks like it'll be interesting, but I'm not... I really like the performances, but I hated the story.
Interesting. Because, I mean, I've become a tough audience when it comes to adaptations because I want it to be not literal. I've kind of lost interest in anything that's just transposing. Like, I'm not going to watch The Killing Joke animated. I skipped 11/22/63 because I read the book. I love the book. So why spend, you know, 10 hours watching a version of the book that I enjoyed? I'd be really more interested in it if it's well done and riffs a bit like the way The Walking Dead does, where it, like, you know, hits high points but is doing its own thing at the same time.
Yeah, see, like, for me, that, like, I really dig Gotham because that's what it's done.
Yeah.
But in this case, like, I guess it's because there's just so many, like, stop starts hopping around that I did find that the story was confusing. But like I said, I'm willing to give it a few episodes to really see if it's just me in this case, and maybe without watching it next to my wife, who's quite obviously hating it, that, you know, I'll get a little more out of it.
Now, Brett, do you think we're going to get Star in this? Because the way they have organized this, how it appears we're staying in this one town rather than traveling around.
I think it'll be the season for television, a
character
town,
that slowly morphs into a penis over the story arc is really hard to do on television.
But so the question is, though, who do you think those two characters are? Do you think they're the sexual detectives, or do you think they're part of the Grail?
I was reading it into sexual detectives, but we don't have a hell of a lot of information yet.
No, and the sexual detectives are, you know, could be weird. And, you know, like, I was taken slightly away from the story by the fact that it's on AMC, therefore there isn't exactly an HBO volume of swearing. I would have preferred, I think if this was on HBO, it would be a much better show, but
that's actually the exact reason I didn't watch it, because I'm like, it didn't seem to me, and I haven't read a lot of Preacher, but from what I've read, it seemed to me there's no way you can do justice to this on something that isn't HBO or Showtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I just finished reading all of the Preachers, and so it's probably the wrong time for me to even watch the show, you know, this close to having read the books.
And I don't remember, I mean, I remember Tulip being, you know, a stone-cold bitch, but this girl's got skills on the series rather than just sort of getting lucky.
It's true.
She's
MacGyver.
And Cassidy is almost unrecognizable. So, it's different enough. It's keeping me intrigued, at least.
Well, I haven't watched the second episode yet, and I'm debating whether I'll leave it or whether I'll, you know, I'll just find the time and start just watching it somewhat regularly.
Anybody, anything else on anybody's mind?
Yeah, Neil Adams made some vague references, and
that could be anything.
What?
He came out with a statement basically denying that he is working on the finish to his deadline, a Dead Man Run. So he is definitely not doing that.
That probably no one has ever asked him.
Yeah, well, I'm like
he denied it in a way that's what he's working on currently, if you know what I mean. But contractually, you can't come out and say it. Would anybody be interested in actually reading that?
Oh, so yeah. I was gonna say, you know, the person who's interested in the finish of that storyline, Neil Adams.
Apparently, I would love to know how many people are clamoring for the finish of Neil Adams' Dead Man storyline.
I mean, how that story was too long ago for the four of us to have
think about that.
So
we're old.
So really, like, let's. This is a book that's targeted at what? Retirement age folks.
maybe Steve Englehart's excited. I don't know. But...
Paul O'Connor.
Yeah, that's.
I will say I read the first issue of Coming of the Superman, and it was way better than Odyssey.
Well, like low hanging fruit.
again, it's, you know.
Yeah, it's really easy to get. We should actually just look at read two pages of Odyssey and then read every other book after it, and then every other book is going to look fantastic.
if our listeners aren't familiar with Batman Odyssey, the book, the 12, what was it? It turned out to be like 13 issues, or wasn't it supposed to be 6 or something? Anyways, it's this Batman storyline that Neil Adams wrote and did it, what, about 4 years ago or something like that?
About 4 years. It's suspended and when the new 52 launched, so that's almost 5 years.
It's almost, I think, single-handedly responsible for us not doing weekly shows anymore, because Keith had the brilliant idea of let's all read this, and the goal isn't to read it and review it. The goal is to see how many issues we get into it before we give up. And he called it the Odyssey or the Gauntlet or something like that. And we all got so far in, like 4 or 5 pages in, enough to the point where we didn't want to do a podcast anymore.
Even for us, we decided it was too cruel for the for our co-hosts.
It was originally published in 2007.
So starting in 2000, but the ending wasn't until 12, though, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So an Odyssey to even get 13 issues, I think it ended up being.
Oh yeah,
I think it was six and then 7, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, but there was just so much great story that it just had to keep going. Yeah.
I just read Scott McCloud's The Sculptor, which original graphic novel, and it's incredible. It is like that good. It was on a lot of the top 10 lists, so I've been waiting to read it. Got it from my local library. Really amazing work. So that's what I've been into. Also, there's some DC comics coming out that are pretty good.
But yeah, but honestly, like, there's a Neil Adams, like, Batman Odyssey hardcover collected edition. You know, I'm just...
He's got the whole thing.
And guess who's... Chris or Keith's Chris... He's already decided.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Nice. Yes, I love
it. I think maybe you want to have that one delivered. I don't know if you want to give me a copy of a giant hardcover omnibus when you're within swinging distance.
But if you go to his website, then there's 3 different interviews with Neil Adams about Odyssey. So,
oh. Oh, it's my great. Gosh.
So great.
I'm more likely to finish those than the book.
Yes, guaranteed.
I'm kind of curious on Comixology Unlimited is a week old now. And we've got a chance to see what is available there. We can't sign up quite yet because we're all Canadian. But I'm wondering which of you three are actually planning on doing it.
I'm addicted. I don't know if you know this. I'm addicted to these subscriptions. I have like 47 subscriptions a month. Google Music and Sirius Satellite Radio and Crave and Show Me and Scribd and Netflix and WWE Network and New Japan World. I'm addicted to this stuff. So I see another one. I'm like, well, I'm in. It's all the stuff that's on Scribd. I'm in anyways.
It's an interesting structure to go with. I mean, it's not actually an unlimited. They're just calling it that because Kindle is already branded as unlimited, because it's really a like you're paying for samples, basically. Like it's all set up as like the first so many issues of the first trade is what you get to sample. It's not whole runs or anything.
No, and that's what's sort of putting me off is that I went in thinking, ooh, you know, sure, it's not the new books, but I'll get some complete runs. But no, it is the first story arc usually.
No, it's not like Marvel Unlimited where sometimes you'll get a complete run. Like once in every 10 books, you will get a complete run.
And not having either of the major two really hurts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately, that $6 isn't probably trickling down to any creator, though. I mean, it's being used as a promotional piece by these companies. It's not like any of your $6 is ending up in the pockets of the makers of Lumberjanes because you read some of the one of the trades on Comixology Unlimited.
I'm still in.
Yeah, of course you are. But I probably won't be. I just don't.
I might do with the month free when it finally is available to Canadians. But I mean, really, it's like I would power through a whole bunch of stuff, and then I'll lose interest in about 2 weeks, and then hopefully I'll remember to cancel it when the month comes up, which is what happens with a lot of these services for me.
All yeah, right,
that's the business model.
Business models do not remind me that you've been taking $10 a month for who knows how long.
All right, it's time to wrap up the show. That's what that means.
Hey, that's cool. We are We Talk Comics on We Talk Podcast. You can reach at We Talk Podcast on Twitter. Each of us has individual Twitter accounts, all of them with our name, and then We Talk Podcast, except for Keith because he's a dick. Well, I mean, because he was there first. Because
it was an early adopter.
Yeah, because he was there first, I meant. Yeah, we're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on TuneIn Radio app. We're supposed to be on Google Music, but I don't think we are. we're on Comicosity, our sponsor. We're on Facebook. We're freaking everywhere. And hopefully you guys enjoy this show, and what we got coming up is more of exactly this.
That's right. And don't forget to check out the Fresh Take Network and Stick Boy, also on We Talk Podcasts.
Yeah.
And do look us up on social media if you just want to bitch about Bloodshot 4001.
Can we get Bloodshit trending?
Yeah.
If we could get Bloodshit trending, that would be greatest thing ever.
And we are totally on Google Play Music, so.
Okay. Yay. Good. All right. Well, I think then we're OUT on this episode. Anything else?
Apparently not. Nope.
Wrap it up.
Season 2.
Wrap it up, Fuzzball.
Wrap it up. Scruffy Nerf Burger.